You Who Are a Bird, written by Sepia Stain Sunset and read by Kaber. This is a Batman fic rated general audiences in which the creator chose not to use archive warnings, as no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship between Dick and Damian. Abbreviated summary. Dick is Batman, but Robin isn't Damian. At least, not just yet.
You look just like your father as the news was delivered. Cut a hole in my heart that bled into my liver. I miss being alone when it didn't mean being alone.
Author's note. I decided to give Damian a Robin arc in the style of Batman the Gauntlet. Their characterization is based loosely on Batman Long Shadows. As for timeline, what timeline?
And if love was contagious, I might be immune to it. Pain's that cold water, your brain just gets used to it. Try to keep swimming and keep Dad's good word in my mouth.
Dick is thankful for the silicone-soled boots. They absorb most of the shock when he slams through the warehouse doors. Everything's become a show these days, him and Alfred tag-teaming to sow evidence of the Dark Knight's legendary return to Gotham. He doesn't even bother with disabling cameras anymore, not when the whole point is to have the world latch onto Batman's presence, like it's a fact of life again. Mostly, he's tired. His body aches with exhaustion, not used to making his movements so bulky and ornamental when he's always fought to win. There are crates piled to one corner of the practically empty room. For a split second, he worries that he's been beaten, a potential tip-off that had sent his quarry running. He really isn't in the mood to chase tonight, not when all of him burns sore and tired. A closer look at the crates and a quick inspection of their contents using the cowl's chemical isolation feature doesn't improve his mood any. Batmobile online, B02. Arrange for pickup at the north exit. This hasn't been a waste of time exactly, but it isn't what he'd been hoping to find tonight. Damian doesn't usually make mistakes like this. He'd been promised an opioid ring, instead he'd found, what, a handful of lumber smugglers? Dick sends up a silent apology to Alfred, but there's no way in hell he's relaying the mishap to the kid. He can already hear his voice, reedy the way only a child's is, raised in argumentation, and it makes his head hurt. Penny one. Channel 2. Go discreet. The least he can do for Alfred is make it so there are no call logs. No doubt Damian would take things even worse if he somehow perceived their exchanges as them mocking him, or worse, scheming against him, cornering him together. If only the cowl came with a massage feature, anything to relieve him of the tension headache that's been building up behind his eyes.
Penny one online,
Alfred reports, the soft sounds of his dust rag against furniture letting him know he's above ground. Hopefully, that meant Damian was down in the cave, working out the case file he's passed off to him. Or just working out, period. Dick would take whatever he could get. Where's Baby Bat at, Penny One? If there aren't going to be any records of this call, then Dick might as well make the most of it. Damian had opposed to the codename vehemently, but Dick had dropped the subject before he could offer up any alternatives. Baby Bat it was, at least behind Damian's back. Alfred pauses. Dick can hear the air on the other end of the line as Alfred sucks in a breath.
Ah,
Alfred says, and Dick is pretty sure he's clenching his teeth. He resists the urge to groan. What had Damian done now?
So you did not yet authorize Baby Bat to operate on the field, I presume?
The question sounds rhetorical, which is good, because Dick is in no fit state to answer. That it hadn't been a mistake, but a deliberate misdirection, is more than a betrayal. It's outright admittance that Damian questions both his authority and his value.
Penny One, please tell me Baby Bat hadn't disobeyed my express orders that he stay put and use his many talents within the cave.
Dick is definitely clenching his teeth. The nerve of the kid. It's almost laudable, really. Where he'd found this misplaced confidence, Dick doesn't know. But was it really too much to ask him to keep it in check? until he could be reasonably sure Damien wouldn't get himself or anyone else killed?
Would that I could,
Alfred exhales. And at least Dick has some sympathy, which is something.
But it appears our baby Bat has stolen away into the night.
Exit Channel 2. Batmobile Online, V02. Cancel pickup. The city seems to be laughing at him as he swings above the streets. It seems, no matter how heavily he protests, he will always have to play the hunter. The boy moves stealthily. He doesn't really need to hide. This is a popular spot for the local children to congregate. When it isn't being populated by various hoodlums and being the stage for cloak and dagger activities, this corner of the city is a favorite playground once school lets out. Dick doesn't know why he bothers with the disguise, the domino, the body armor, the gray hooded cape. None of it hides his identity in the least. Not to him. Not to anyone who knows where to look. For one, no kid wore that air of purposefulness about them the way Damien did. His every step is measured, deliberate in a way no 10-year-old should be. Besides, the cape had a tracker sewn into it from Dick's days as Robin. It's cute that this kid thinks he's the first of their lot to find his wings. Real cute, and real frustrating to be on the receiving end of. What would Bruce do if he were faced with such obstinacy? Dick doesn't know. All he has in his deck is what he himself would do, and that's to blunder ahead. Damien looks up at him, where he's perched on the roof of one of the squat buildings. It took him about a minute to clock him. Not bad, since Dick hadn't been trying to make himself visible. The game's up, though, for them both, so Dick doesn't bother dragging it out any further. His cape eddies around him as he lands, his shadow on the wall a grotesque creature. Damien opens his mouth like he wants to argue, but he clearly thinks better of it because he doesn't want to protest when Dick frog marches him to where the Batmobile is waiting. He only really hesitates when they get to the car and Dick releases him, like he's thinking of making a break for it.
Come on, Dick says, surprised at the even tone of his voice. Let's go home.
Understand what I'm doing wrong. Dick can't quite keep the whine out of his voice, dunking glasses under the stream of water issuing from the tap. He cleans without any finesse, using his chores more as an opportunity to rant than to get the house in any kind of order. He can't find it in himself to feel guilty about it either. The more freedom I try to give him, the more Damien thwarts my authority. But I know the second I try to be firm, he'll push back. He's impossible. Dick wipes at the glass so ferociously, it's a miracle it doesn't slip out of his hands and shatter against the floor. He's also 10 years old, Alfred points out with a tut, trying to wipe at his eyes discreetly while he julienned onions. Is that what this is about? Growing pains? Dick tries to be empathetic, but he knows he's missing the mark. His voice sounds terse even to his own ears, but he can't help it. He's exhausted, spread too thin, and burning what little energy he had left on battles at the home front. He's tired of this city. He can admit that to himself. Maybe even a little bit afraid. The Gotham he knows best is the snap of hungry jaws, a city that pulls on its people, feeds on them. He's lived in Gotham most of his life, and he's never gotten used to it. The way the city can change in a blink, the way it can turn into a stranger right before his eyes. I doubt it was this bad with Bruce, Dick says, wincing at the casual way Bruce's name leaves his mouth. He looks at Alfred from the corner of his eyes, but except for his shoulders being set in a tense line, there's no overt change to his behavior. But you're not Master Bruce, Master Richard. Alfred pushes the chopped onions to the side of the chopping board, gestures for him to take the knife and wash it. Dick does, drying it on the tea towel he discarded earlier. Alfred gives him a meaningful look, waiting for the answer to dawn on him. He's punishing me, he realizes. The little brat.
He's punishing me for not, what? Not being Bruce? Not being his father?
Maybe so, Master Richard. Alfred turns the knob for the leftmost burner on the stove. Blue flames spring to life immediately. He places a cast iron skillet on top, pours in olive oil. Dick watches him push in the onions to caramelize them, waits. Alfred doesn't turn to face him as he says,
"Well, maybe he's punishing you for not being his brother."
Alfred is wrong, is the thing. Dick wouldn't say it out loud, would never offend him on purpose, but, well, it is what it is. In this particular instance, when it came to Damien's sentiments towards Dick, Alfred is wrong. Damien has never wanted a brother. Hell, he'd barely wanted Dick as a friend, someone to lean on while he learned the city. He's made that much abundantly clear, at least, even if the rest of his thought process remained a mystery to him. Dawn has only just broken into morning when he wakes to the uncanny feeling of eyes observing him. By the time he actually bothers with getting up and dressing himself, pulling on a pair of joggers for decency's sake, Damien is long gone from his room. Dick doesn't understand what to make of this, a new habit he'd developed since Dick had begun sparring with him. Scoping him. Intimidation?
I'm guessing Damien made himself breakfast.
Dick walks into the kitchen, trying not to yawn too wide. His shoulders ache, the physical weight of the cape straining his muscles. He's lightened it 3 times so far, and it still weighs a ton. It's the problem he's struggling to balance, quite literally.
He's informed me he's ready to move beyond Aikikai. I believe he's begun researching Krav Maga.
Alfred doesn't so much as pause his wipe down of the granite countertop, though he does glance up at Dick to add,
If we do not act soon, I fear Master Damien may have been in Gotham to find a master who's willing to teach him what he wants to learn.
Oh dear, Dick notes dryly, aware that he's being mean and comfortable with it. Damien was cutting into his sleeping hours, which were already few and far between. He was this close to tranquilizing himself, even though that wouldn't help if Damien kept sneaking into his room. His training was too deeply ingrained in his brain to keep from noticing his presence. Whatever shall we do if we lose him? Alfred tosses him an apple from the fruit basket on the kitchen counter. Dick would have preferred to indulge in a better meal, but there's undoubtedly some new fire he has to put out now.
Where is Damien, anyway?
It's 6 o'clock in the morning. Where do you think, Master Richard?
Alfred flicks a glance towards the hallway. The way to the grandfather clock.
He's waiting for you, ready to resume his training.
With bad grace, I presume? Alfred raises a brow.
He was watching me sleep.
Ah, Alfred hums, finally pausing his cleaning.
He's watching over you. I think he's afraid that you're planning on retiring the cowl and returning to Bloodhaven.
Dick shakes his head in amazement. Alfred's discernment was legendary, yet he was nearly blind when it came to Damien. Afraid of Dick hanging up the cape and cowl? Yeah, right. Damien probably couldn't wait for him to leave. How was it that when it came to Damien, Alfred was so wrong? Dick is rewarded for his tardiness with a war cry and an ambush from Damien that he manages to ward off without tumbling down the Batcave stairs.
You shouldn't announce yourself to the enemy like that, he observes critically, shepherding Damien to the training room.
There are various holographs available, information about Gotham's rogue gallery pumped into the systems for the Batcomputer. Damien doesn't seem like he wants to take on Killer Croc today. Fair enough. The cathartic joy Dick received from pounding Bane into the dirt wasn't an experience Damien could understand without knowing Bruce the way he did. They might as well go for hand to hand, especially since Damien seemed to have some frustration from the previous night to work off.
Being foiled by the same guy Damien liked to denigrate on the daily was probably a hard blow to recover from. Dick feels smug about it, lets himself bask in the feeling for just a second. "You shouldn't be late to a fight," Damien retorts, picking up a bow staff without hesitation. For all his proficiency with his swords, Damien appeared to favor more non-lethal weapons. There's a story there that he doesn't know and that Damien doesn't seem inclined to share. He could keep his secret so long as they didn't make him a liability on the field. Bruce would never let it be, but Damien doesn't know that. Besides, if respecting his privacy got him some leeway from the kid, then so be it. Dick readies himself. The second he drops into a defensive stance, Damien attacks without hesitation. This time, there's no fanfare, no bellows, only the taut line of his body, the swing of his staff coming down on him. There's enough force behind the blow that it will hurt if it connects, Damien's mute fury screaming at him through his actions. "Good," Dick calls, even as he flips out of the way. Damien twists a second after he does, balancing on the tips of his fingers, using them to push himself forward. His reflexes are sharp when his head's in the game, which is a good sign. "Better." "Stop talking," Damien grits through his teeth, aiming for his right side. So he'd caught on to the fact that Dick had been favoring his left, sore as he was on the other side. That was good, too. It also meant that he was a much faster learner than Dick had been giving him credit for. "Sorry, it comes with the training." Dick moves out of the way, gives Damien a love tap as he misses him. "You wouldn't ask Joker to shut up, would you? Stop being reactionary." "I just might," Damien grumbles, tries to faint. Dick sees right through it, and he receives another jab against his side for the trouble. Damien moves all wrong at moments like this, reacting instead of pressing his advantage. "There's no fun in that," he complains. "You're still being reactionary." Damien swings at his feet. Dick leaps over him, flicking his forehead as he does. "Losing your temper now? That's no good. It makes you careless." He's turning red in the face, more with upset than exertion. His poker face might be good, but in this arena, he was rapidly losing his cool. Dick decides to put him out of his misery. It wouldn't do to have Damien feel like he was being mocked. Hopefully, he'd filtered in whatever advice Dick had interspersed with his taunts and would make use of it. "The point isn't to put you in your place, you know." Dick grabs his staff before he can start swinging without thought, using his momentum to lift him clear off his feet and slam him down against the floor. He put him on his back so it wouldn't hurt as much and he wouldn't accidentally knock a tooth out, so the kid had better be grateful. "Though I won't lie, it's a bonus I'm enjoying thoroughly." "Do you always talk so much?" Damien grits his teeth, looking like a put-out cat. Dick wrenches the staff from his grasp, places it against his forehead, and gives him a gentle tap. With enough force, he could drive it straight through his skull, a fact that anyone in an actual no-holds-barred fight would gladly exploit, and something Damien undoubtedly knows. "I have to. It tests your focus, your ability to keep your calm on the field. Do you understand why I can't have you running into fights just yet?" He relents, moving the staff away and offering his hand. Damien waves him off, leaping up nimbly. "You keep acting like I'm bound to be a liability just because I don't match expectations you don't even bother clarifying for me," Damien complains, a spark of hurt flashing in his eyes before it disappears again. Now that he isn't being goaded and run to the ground, his mask clicks back into place between one breath and the next. "What makes you think I haven't clarified them for you?" Dick asks, legitimately confused. "I give you case files, I train you every day, and I've made Leslie update me on your progress in her triage lessons. I'm making sure you won't get yourself or anybody else killed if I let you loose." "I'm not your pet monster, Grayson," Damien sneers, which is fair. Dick makes a mental note to word things like that better. "Besides, how can you even make sure I'm field ready when you don't even bother simulating field conditions? How am I supposed to prove myself when you've kept me bubbled under the city?" Dick feels like he's been struck over the head with Damien's bow staff. "What, you want me to yell at you more? Maybe you set something on fire?" he quips faintly, too busy following the hint of an idea that Damien had accidentally set off. A test. A modified version from Bruce's, something that could show him whether Damien was ready to wear the R. Do you want to go again? He tosses the staff at him, filing the thought for later, when he could consult with Alfred. Damien doesn't hesitate, catching it before it can hit the ground. Yes. Good. Let's hit it. And what exactly is the purpose of this again? Damien wrinkles his nose, trying to look haughty. Standing in Bruce's ground floor study, surrounded by nothing but polished wood and plush furniture, a far cry from the moth-eating couch in his own Bloodhaven bachelor pad, makes his stomach twist. It's supposed to be someone else here, leaning against this mammoth desk, casting shadows longer than any Dick could conjure up himself. The room is somehow draughty and suffocating at the same time. Enrichment, Dick grins, baring his teeth in his own way. You're not getting out of this without being able to repeat back the rules to me, backwards and in a handstand. You hear me? We've been over your dumb rules already, Damien rolls his eyes exaggeratedly. 12 times, to be precise. 13th time lucky, then. He barely manages to move out of the way as the younger boy throws himself into a handstand on the carpet, somehow managing to look condescending while also looking like half a circus act. 3. Don't get caught before sunrise, which I won't, because I'm not as useless as the lot you're used to. 2. Don't engage with anyone packing heat, which I might point out renders this entire exercise futile. 1. Call Oracle if anything goes wrong, because you're a paranoid asshole who can't admit that I'm better than you are at the Robinstick. And that's all your rules, backwards and in a handstand as requested. Now may I please stand right side up? The carpet is gross. It's Sevenary, Dick dismisses, and that particular story has to be earned, not freely given. Instead, he observes, you have objections. I took the liberty of making notes, yes. Damien writes himself without waiting for the verbal confirmation, dusting off imaginary lint from his pants, even though the room is spotless and they both know it. That's what paying attention means. Oh, my apologies. Paying attention is what people who don't slack off and fall asleep on the job do. Dick grits his teeth, but doesn't take the bait. He hadn't expected Damien to let go of his slip-up from Tuesday so easily. Still, the younger boy knew as well as he did that there was no other cure. No number of 4, 7, 8 breathing cycles that could substitute as one either, for extensive sleep debt. Your objections are noted and discarded. On what grounds? Damien sounds genuinely outraged, frustrated at the very least. Jesus, this kid. The urge to track Talia down and show her how much he appreciated her little doorstep surprise is hard to push down. Your time begins in an hour. Dick reminds, raising a taunting brow. Do you really want to give up your lead? I don't need a lead to put you in your place. Oh, God, and he sneers exactly like his mother, too. I could beat you blindfolded, and we both know it. He walks out sedately in a show of indifference. Still, he leaves the room at least. Damien hasn't lived in this house long enough to know that open windows in the west wing of the manor carry noises from the front of the house. Dick strains his ears and is rewarded for his patience by the sound of someone running down the main steps. He smiles. The house is quiet in a way no other part of Gotham is. The city has always been a positive explosion of noise, traffic and footfalls, and the chiming of bells from bodega doors swinging open. All his life, he'd appreciated the peace that came with the manor's silence. It hadn't been stillness. No, there had always been life within the manor, whether it was the chirping of birds from the garden, paired with the hum of the insects that lived in the soft earth beneath the kitchen window where Alfred's gardenias bloomed, or the human sounds of a house that was lived in. Faucets spraying water, the clink of glasses set against the kitchen counter, the sound of a fork scraping against a plate. Now there is nothing. save for the faint click of dog nails against wood as Ace makes his way around the house, looking for a comfortable spot where he can lay down. Dick hates this silence. It's oppressive, almost louder than any noise the city can produce. There's always been a song buried beneath the rest of the notes. Alfred, humming into himself as he whipped the house into shape, Bruce's footfalls, the heavy tread of them as he roamed the house, nothing like Batman's cat-like padding. He'd always loved that sound the most. His father, a man at last, no longer playing at being a ghost. Dick brushes the thought away as he descends into the cave. It's a perfect choral down there. The soft hum of the bat computer, the chittering of the bats, everything alive even when nothing else is. "I'm back," he calls, half-joking. It's not like he's delusional enough to expect a response, but stranger things have happened beneath this roof. Predictably, there's nothing. Dick sets about preparing himself for the task ahead of him. Damien doesn't have anything on him except for what minimal body armor he'd picked out for himself, and maybe riot foam capsules. Additionally, he could have squirreled away bolas and grapples, neither of which were against the rules, but weren't exactly in the spirit of their match. Still, if it limited damage to him to bruises instead of injuries of a more lethal variety, Dick wasn't going to make it a point of law. He'd gone mostly empty-handed, though. From where Dick's standing, it looks as though Damien is waiting to do a victory lap with an official Robin design, complete with gear. If nothing else, Damien at least comes with all the cockiness necessary to be part of the Batman and. Dick packs away some riot foam himself, just in case. He'd prefer restraining any threats he doesn't have to deal with immediately, and a large enough amount can contain explosions, stifling them so they do minimal damage. He hesitates at taking the pressurized rebreathers, though. There's no reason to assume Damien has gone underwater. Gotham Harbor is filthy on its best days. Besides, Damien wouldn't risk it, just in case it breached any of the parameters they'd set. He was in this to prove a point, after all. He wouldn't risk having a victory snatched away from him on a technicality. With his equipment sorted, Dick moves on to making a plan of action. Damien's head start is nearly up. It's almost sundown. Computer, access schematics of the city. Make it a window of the past 6 months. There hadn't been anything in the news about large-scale reconstruction. Besides, Dick doubted that Damien had even had the opportunity to access the blueprint stored in the Bat computer. The obvious choice was to explore the city himself, which is what Dick had done at his age. The Bat computer produces several versions. Dick selects the latest one. There's an additional link that comes with it. A trust started by the mayor for rebuilding the Trigate Bridge since the last Joker attack. Dick doesn't recall any construction actually taking place, even though the article is dated back to 3 months ago. There hasn't even been a whisper of a tender being offered to the city's contractors. Dick saves the article so he can run a check on the mayor and the trustees later. Damien hasn't been in the city for long. The places most familiar to him would be Mercy Hospital, where he took first aid and triage lessons under Leslie's guidance. Maybe Leslie's clinic, if she had ever taken him there, and the Wayne Botanical Gardens, where Dick had taken him once in order to make a public appearance. He'd enjoyed the butterfly gardens there, and even though he'd left his sketchbook at home, his fingers had occasionally twitched like he wanted to reach for his pencils. The Botanical Gardens it was, then. Dick bites back a curse when he finds the butterfly gardens empty of any prepubescent stowaways. Still, it would have been disappointing to go to all this trouble, only for Damien to be caught before the moon is full-bellied in the sky. Damien, in an uncharacteristic act of thoughtfulness, has apparently seen fit to leave him a note. Dick digs it up from where it's been buried by the roots of a flowering plant he can't identify properly in the dark. He brushes off the dirt, impressed by the sheer gall of the kid. "For the ending of the day, creator of the world, we pray that thy wanted favor, thou wouldst be our guard and keeper now," Dick reads aloud, eyebrows raising with every word. It's a taunt, that much is obvious, but Damien wouldn't leave him breadcrumbs for nothing. He's leading Dick right to him, challenging him to find his location before it's sunup. "Computer, access the shadow drive. Record new audio file." Dick rattles off the words he's been handed. It's some sort of hymn from the sound of it. He decides to make his way over to Leslie's clinic while he mulls over the clue. From the clinic, the hospital was barely a few minutes away. Even if the former didn't pan out, he could still check the ladder. If he still came up empty, then he could reevaluate his plan and sketch a new profile for Davian. He picks the door to Leslie's clinic. Hopefully, she wouldn't mind much. Even if he left everything undisturbed, she still had a knack for knowing when Batman came knocking. She would notice even the slightest displacement of a dust mote. It's empty. Thermal scanning doesn't pick up anything. Damn. The skeleton in Leslie's office has been repositioned, seated where Leslie would be, its arms politely folded on top of her desk. There's another cipher waiting for him, tucked in between the third and fourth ribs of the skeleton.
Pardon me?
He apologizes to the skeleton as he pulls the paper out. When Damian watches back the footage, which he undoubtedly will regardless of the outcome of this test, Dick hopes this will garner him a laugh. The kid seems like he hasn't heard a joke in ages, brushing off his quips with eye rolls. The least Dick could do is give him some entertainment.
With the light of dawn,
he reads aloud. Only five words, plucked at random and not at all in the style of the previous verse. The back computer confirms that this is a different version of the same hymn. So, this was Damien's way of admonishing him, a subtle hint that he was going to outlast him if he kept going down this track. Dick tries not to let his smile show. It wouldn't do to have Damien know he was enjoying this. A chance to pretend the cape and cowl weren't as heavy as they truly were. The hospital will be a bust as well, then. Dick almost wants to go there anyways, do a sweep for completion's sake, but it's already been an hour since the hourglass had been turned, and he can't afford to waste any time. The hymn. What did the hymn mean? Damien had once complained about Dick's seemingly insane leaps of logic. There was no way he'd forego his pride and make his cipher something more complicated than it needs to be. Dick discards the meter, decides to focus on the words. He's pretty sure Talia wasn't raised religious and hadn't brought Damien up under any particular faith either. Damien had mentioned celebrating Christmas once, but it seemed more like Talia was trying to show him different cultures than a ritual of any sort of faith. So what was the point of picking a hymn? Unless... Dick can't help the incredulous laugh that escapes him. Were the verses of the hymn supposed to correspond to Bruce? That certainly made figuring out his next moves easier, even though it makes the mirth dissipate like smoke. Back computer, access the shadow file. Play back the latest audio recording. His own voice fills his ears, reciting the cipher with no particular inflection. It hadn't been much trouble finishing the rest of the hymn. He'd gone two verses ahead and backwards both, preparing himself for either case. Most likely, though, Damian would have elected to go forward, especially if he was trying to trace the creation of Batman. He has to go through Mantlow Park, trace his way into the city center, and then he'd have to go to the place that birthed the Batman, the beginning and the end of everything. The place where the story of Gotham was washed away by blood, rewritten in Bruce's own hand. Crime Alley. The sky is thick with fog. A handful of stars shine above Gotham, making a valiant effort to be seen through the layers of pollution. Frank Lloyd Wright, the renowned architect, had once called this city Jotunheim, a land for giants, a land for dreamers. Bruce had never quoted the man to him, but Dick knew he took a sort of pleasure from the words, found hope in them that he didn't find in any of the scriptures he'd read in his quest to become the Batman. It was proof that there was beauty in this land. The larger he dreamed, the better suited he was for Gotham. It was a place to be larger than life, larger than nightmares. The only possible stage for Batman. What would Bruce say to this, then? To his children hunting each other down in the dark? The hymn of protection that Damian had seen, that had invoked him in Bruce's name. I'm doing the best I can, Dick calls into the night, like the sound will carry across the cobbled streets, burrow down into the ground where Bruce has been laid to rest. I'm doing what you want, what you would do. Would he have allowed Damian to do this, though? Trespass this place, the tiny alleyway that had robbed him of everything? The place that had given them their father, but taken away his family. It rankles that Dick doesn't know. Bruce had reveled in the absences he left, took it as a mark of greatness that he could vanish out of existence at the drop of a hat. That had never satisfied Dick, though. The fact that he probably knew Bruce better than anyone else in the world did, and yet hardly even knew him at all. It's one thing to disrespect Dick, but it's another thing entirely for Damien to carry his vendetta across to Bruce, to Bruce's memories. They were going to have words about this once Damien was netted and deposited safely back at the manor. That proves to be harder than it seems, however. When he arrives at Crime Alley, careful to keep his distance, thermal imaging turns up nothing once again. There is one figure, someone slumped unconscious at the mouth of an alleyway, but the proportions are far too big to be Damien's. It's a grown man, probably seeking shelter for the night. Dick leaves him be. If Damien really were anywhere in the alleyway, Dick would have picked up on it. The cow came with a physiology dampener, but Damien wasn't in any of the suits they'd modified in the cave. All he was wearing was the barest hint of body armor, nothing sophisticated enough to fool the cowl's sensors. It's only as he does a second sweep of the alley that he realizes the man's body temperature is dropping. With a frown, Dick approaches him. Was he injured? No. There's blood beneath him, likely from someone moving his body there. He died within the past 12 hours, judging by his core temperature. Had Damien stumbled across his body? But then, why hadn't he called Oracle? The realization prickles across his skin, making his hair stand on end. He hadn't called Oracle because he'd known exactly whose handiwork this had been. Damien had probably run off to chase his lead. Oracle, channel 2, go discreet.
This is Oracle online.
Barbara's voice is a welcome change of pace from the silence he's been operating in thus far.
And how can I help you today, boy wonderful?
Any info on Baby Bat's past cases would be greatly appreciated, oh, he says, filling her in on all that has transpired over the past few hours.
Do you think he's got a good guess?
Barbara asks as he calls in a tip about the body to the GCPD, all her earlier cheeriness gone. He'd known she'd be up all night, keeping Dinah company on a mission somewhere else on the planet, but now it seems as though she'll be working till dawn trying to track Damien down.
Baby Bat's been proving to be a good sleuth lately.
Dick answers her as soon as he's off the line with the police.
I think he's got more than a good guess. He might just have nailed the bad guy.
Barbara is quiet, typing something. She's probably trying to figure out which case files Damien has left open, which ones might produce answers. He knows she won't rest till she's satisfied that she's done all she could, and that's a bar so high he doubts she'd ever reach it. She's always had a soft spot for kids, first with Tim, then with Cass. Damien would do well to recognize that he had a powerful ally in his corner.
Damn it, Damien, where are you?
Do you think he's all right?
She asks at last. Dick doesn't know how to answer her, so he doesn't. His silence tells her more than anything he can say. The Batman mantle is no gift, not really. It's not a duty, either. A curse. No, that's not the word he'd use to describe this last remaining piece of his father, handed down to him far earlier than he was prepared to accept it. Bruce didn't know that the suit smelled like him, just the faintest hint of his cologne, absent to anyone who didn't know to look for it. He'd have put the suit through decontamination, washed his skin raw, done whatever it took to erase that trace of him from it, which is why Dick had never told him. It helps him now, grounds him. He inhales the scent as discreetly as he can from his perch over Gotham. The city is a spill of colors beneath him, sepia-toned streetlights, fluorescent billboards, gray stoned roads and red brick buildings, like a place out of time. Or maybe in every time, all together and all at once. Dick tries to picture Damien, standing where he had, surveying his father's kingdom. What did he think of this place? He never gave Dick a straight answer, but then again, Dick had never tried to wheedle one out of him. Oracle had said this was the last place he'd been spotted, when the moon had been full in the sky. Dawn hasn't broken yet, but the sky's turned milky, shades of plum slithering into the dark, a sure sign that the sun will rise, and soon. In a sick way, Damien seemed to have cinched his victory.
He tries not to gag at the thought, but it's all that pounds away at his head, this heavy feeling that he may just be too late.
It's Maroni,
Oracle says in his earpiece. Dick feels his stomach plummet against his will.
Sal?
Bruno.
Dick frowns at that. Sal at least was a known variable. Bruno. He sketches out the Maroni family tree in his head. Bruno was Sal's nephew, or something like it. He was in the family business, same as the rest, but he wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed. That was the extent of Bruce's files on him, which made it all the more surprising that he had a hand in whatever was going down tonight.
Baby Bat suspected that he feels he's being shortchanged by the rest of the family. He's recently gotten into smuggling, hoping to curry favor with the big names outside of Gotham.
The words trigger a memory of a day some weeks ago when he'd grappled with a similar case, one Damien was supposed to gather intelligence on before he decided to redirect Dick. Also, he could skulk around random alleyways in the city. Smuggling, like opioids. Barbara pauses her typing, sounds surprised when she asks,
"He told you?"
In a manner of speaking.
Well, did he tell you that he's found an informant and planned on talking to him? He's been trying to get in contact with him for days. It's all right there, in his notes.
Barbara's voice is thick with emotion as she scrolls through his case logs, the clack of her keyboard sharp against his ears.
Someone must have tipped off Bruno that there was a rat.
Dick can picture him cracking the case, that smug grin painted across his face. He knows what the case notes would look like, handwriting almost painfully perfect. Everything neatly scribbled right there, in the margins of the file. He slipped up sometimes, though, his hands moving faster than his mind could keep up. Once, Dick had found a doodled kitten at the corner of one of the case files Damien had turned in. He hadn't told the kid, wary that he'd take it as admonishment. Dick swallows down the lump in his throat. This was a solid lead. If Bruno didn't quail when confronted with the evidence of his crimes, Dick had other methods he could use to obtain the information he needed.
GCPD fingerprinted the body and turned up zilch. He's not on file with the police, but it's a match to someone who's been seen hanging around Bruno a couple of times. One Peter Morrison, according to the Bat Computer's database. He's in charge of Gotham's youth outreach program.
Barbara retorts.
What do you think?
That he's the perfect candidate for Bruno to team up with?
Dick feels his fist clench.
Who better to peddle Bruno's filth than the teens on Gotham Street? He really did think of everything.
I thought as much,
Barbara says, and he can picture the disgust written across her face, the anger at the injustice of it all, that a terrible hand at life condemned Gotham's children to a life as Maroni's drug mules.
But why dump the body at over there?
It's a message to Baby Bat that he'd better stay away. Maroni must have mistaken him for Robin.
Dick fumbles the words. Gotham hasn't yet begun to stir. The sky is still peppered with stars. The moon, clouded over but present nevertheless. It's almost a pretty sight, rare for this city with its giants trampling all the rest underfoot before they could get a glimpse.
He's by Mooney Bay. There's a storage facility over there. Belongs to another member of the Maroni family, but Bruno must have cut him a deal to let him make use of it.
Some of that heaviness abates. He's halfway down the building, grapple looped at the other end of the street by the time Barbara begins speaking again.
Batman, bring him back to us. Bring him home.
When Dick arrives by the docks, the waters are eerily still. For a second, he'd been afraid they'd been off the mark, Bruno having holed up somewhere else, Damien in his claws. But Barbara's detective work had been accurate as always. There haven't been any shipments that day, but that hasn't prevented Bruno from coming down to the riverside to check on his merchandise. The warehouse looks new, of mammoth proportions, none of the crumbly brick of the old Gotham style. The walls look like aluminum rib steel, with anchored cores at the roof corners. It's strong and hard, but not impenetrable. Dick scales the side with ease, pulling himself up onto the roof by a gloved hand. His boots are heavy, but his footfalls are muted, impossible to detect unless Bruno had some kind of meta ability Bruce hadn't known about. There's a mini acetylene stored in his belt. He burns a hole through the top, landing on some kind of mezzanine. There's no one around, the cowl's thermal sensing directing him downwards to the floor of the warehouse. He switches to night vision lenses as soon as he spots Damien, circled by Bruno and his crew, most of whom were armed with makeshift weapons, except for one man who has a revolver. Damien doesn't cut a particularly imposing figure. He's always been small for his age, but he looks even smaller when he's curled up to protect himself from the worst of the injuries Bruno's lackeys deal him. Something keeps him from raining hellfire on the motley group beneath him. Bruno is impossible to miss, the only one unarmed in the ring they've formed, as though assured of his safety. That isn't what keeps Dick away, though. It's Damien, the way he doesn't keep his gaze on any one of them. He isn't scared, at least not for himself. There's more to this than he can see.
"So who was it?"
Bruno growls. It's what Dick can make out by lip reading, at least. "Who was what?" Damien sits up.
"Cal optic magnification, 150%, Dick whispers, voice barely audible to himself.
His lenses zoom in obligingly. His grip on the mezzanine's railing is so tight, he half thinks he'll leave an imprint on the steel. There's a bruise on the side of Damien's cheek, a mark of purple, and his domino is covered in a spiderweb of cracks, splintered in various places. Dick can see the barest hint of his iris, the startling green of them. There's a kind of intensity to his eyes, not his usual brand, but something entirely new. At least he wasn't struggling to get up, which meant they'd spared his ribs. They aren't going to get off easy, by any means, but Dick will make it a point to leave their ribs intact if he can. One of Maroni's crew prods Damien with the blunt end of his weapon, jarring at his temple. Bruno finally makes him stop with a gesture to stand down.
"Who was it that tipped you off that I was here?"
Bruno says, a false veneer of patience over his words.
"There's no way you could have found this place without another informant. We both know what happened to your old one."
Damien stares up at him in blatant disbelief. Dick can't wrap his head around this either. Did he not realize they were detectives? Did he think Robin was some sort of teen enforcer, picking up whoever he thought was at fault? Bruce really had Bruno pegged as the weak link of the Maroni family. "What are you going to do if I don't tell you?" Damien sneers, recovering at last. "Pick off your flunkies one by one till you find the right one?" Bruno strokes his chin, considering. Dick nearly swings over the side when Bruno moves, grabbing the revolver from one of his hired goons, tossing him near Damien, gun aimed at the unfortunate man's temples. Dick freezes. Going down now could spook him into shooting.
"I'm afraid that's what you're for."
Bruno grins, even as the goon slumped on the floor in front of him begins to protest. The rest of his crew have frozen up, unsure of what to do. "You can't seriously off your own crew," Damien says, alarmed. "That's crazy."
"You're the hero," Bruno shrugs, the arm holding the gun trained on his own lackey. "Talk, and you can spare his life."
"I already told you, there is no other informant." The words seem to spill out of Damien's mouth. "Listen to me, you don't understand." Bruno laughs at that, a full-bodied laugh ribbed with hysteria. This wasn't good. He seemed liable to empty his clip at any moment.
"No, you don't understand."
He releases his hold on the gun as he talks, but it remains aimed in their direction. Dick can't use the riot foam, not without risking Damien getting shot. With the body armor he's got on right now, he might stand a chance from a distance, but at point-blank range? Dick can't chance it.
"When the rest of the family finds out what I've done, that have gone behind their backs, I'll be a dead man walking. They won't rest till they've all gotten the chance to put a bullet in me."
Bruno wheezes through his laughing fit.
"Don't you see? I've got nothing left to lose. What's another murder to my name if it keeps me alive?"
"Please, he really has nothing to do with this." Damien shrugs his way out of his bonds, the way he could have done ages ago. It's laughable that they thought they could hold him with some lousy rope, but no one so much as flinches at his actions. Bruno is busy watching the man on the floor. The rest are watching the gun, wary and waiting, too afraid to run, not nearly brave enough to intervene. Damien has more courage in his little finger than the rest of them put together.
"Take me instead.
Take me hostage and let these people go, Damien pleads, drawing himself up to his full height. He's so small, far too small for the sacrifice he's about to make.
Why would I want to do that? Bruno says, sounding genuinely puzzled.
Dick sees Damien gnash his teeth with frustration, but takes a placating step forward nonetheless, subtly trying to put himself between the man and Bruno. He isn't nearly close enough to the man to do that, needs to shuffle over an inch or two more, which he can't do without giving the game away.
Because I'm Robin, of course. The Moroni family hates me with a vengeance. Your Uncle Sal swore that he'd see me dead no matter the cost. You'd be rewarded handsomely for handing me over to them.
Damien's voice is probably hoarse with disuse, but he speaks enticingly.
Think about it. At most, you'll get a temporary burst of joy at killing this man. But if you hand me over, think of the way the rest of the family will be indebted to you, Bruno. You'll get everything you've ever wanted. Wealth, power, respect. No one in the family would dare to cross you if you prove that you took down someone trained by the Batman all by yourself.
Bruno stops aiming at the man, his arm positioned so the gun points up at the high roof of the warehouse. Dick relaxes his stance some at that.
You make a good argument, he admits grudgingly, tapping at his chin with the arm that isn't holding the gun.
Damien's shoulders droop a little, his relief palpable.
So we're in agreement then. You let this man and the rest of your crew leave, and I stay with you as your bargaining chip.
Now why on earth would I agree to those terms?
Bruno's smile is an ugly thing, a scar across the muscles of his face. Dick wants to kick his teeth in, and it's only fear for Damien and the other man that's keeping him rooted in place. Damien looks at Bruno with fervid desperation and a sense of dawning horror.
But you said...
I mean, if you're so willing to lay down your life, I must have a really good hand, Bruno continues. So, little bird, if you don't mind playing hostage, then you can do that after I put your little rat out of his misery.
Bruno brings his arm down, aiming at the man on the floor.
No!
When Damien moves, for a second, all Dick can think is how much he looks like his father. The shadow he casts across the floor is nowhere near as imposing, his body too unused to its own weight to look anything like Bruce would, but there's a determination to his movements that he's only ever seen in Batman. Then Dick is moving too. He'll never quite be sure who the scream rips its way free from. Damien, realizing he's out of time and throwing himself in front of the man. Bruno, stumbling back as Dick rains down flash bombs before he can pull the trigger, a batarang already arcing toward the arm holding the gun. Or if it had been him, thinking for a second that he'd lost everything, everything, his grief already in the shape of a cry. It's chaos around him. Bruno's crew, making use of his distraction, have fled, abandoning their weapons on the floor. It doesn't matter. The cowls auto-save their faces to its database. Bruno's on his knees on the warehouse floor, clutching his bleeding arm, howling as the fact that he's lost sets in. Dick freezes him in riot foam for the police to pick up, disposing of the gun before it can do any more damage. The man he'd nearly killed, the one who Damien had nearly died for, is missing too. Dick can't be bothered to care about any of them, not when Damien is staring up at him in dismay.
You're okay?
He asks, his voice coming out weird, crooked with emotion and the modulator.
Of course I'm okay, Damien snaps, sounding very much like he wishes he wasn't.
Dick doesn't hesitate to gather him up in a hug. What hadn't he been afraid of every time Bruce donned this cape and cowl? He'd always hugged his father like he was already doing it for the last time. That had been the sum of their words to each other, the world's most painful, extended goodbye.
You're okay, Dick exhales into his hair.
For all the grime he's coated in, it still smells like the shampoo Alfred stocks at the manor, faint hints of aloe and rosemary and baby soft strands. Damien has gone stiff in his arms, voice uncomfortable as he says,
I'm not a rank amateur, Batman.
You're alive.
He can't help but hold on a little tighter, almost unforgiving.
I thought I would be too late.
You weren't, Damien allows, then says, I almost wish you were. Dick feels his heart seize. The shape of Damien's almost sacrifice takes on a much darker silhouette in his memory. The rest of the cipher, Damien prompts him, like Dick can think of anything except the revelation he just dropped on him. From all ill dreams defend our eyes, from nightly fears and fantasies, tread underfoot our ghostly foe, that no pollution we may know, Dick recites mechanically. You expected me to make my way to Wayntech, where Batman gets his gear, but you're much more sentimental than you like to let on. It was going to be either the gargoyle by the GCPD headquarters or the clock tower, the best vantage points of the city. I found pictures in the manor. Damien hesitates, but eventually unwraps himself from Dick's arms, which have turned to lead weights where they rest on his shoulders, offers him consolation by saying, I believe he liked to brood a lot. I like to imagine that he found peace in surveying over his city.
His kingdom, Dick mutters, shaking his head with a laugh. So, which would it have been? The gargoyle or the clock tower?
You would have found me regardless. Damien's throat bobs. He looks like he's struggling to get the words out. You did find me, and it isn't yet sunrise. You win.
Oh.
Oh. No wonder Damien hadn't wanted to be found. Dick almost laughs with relief, thinks better of the impulse when he catches sight of Damien's face, the way he's clenching his jaw so hard it's certain to hurt.
Don't do that.
He taps a gloved finger to the kid's cheek, the unbruised one, signaling at him to unclench his jaw before he breaks a tooth. He needs to get them both home so he can give them a proper once-over, but Bruno didn't seem to have done much in the way of physical damage. Damien draws himself up to his full height. Even crouching, Dick still feels like he towers over him. I understand that I failed to pass your test, he says, then has to clear his throat. Dick decides to pretend he hasn't heard it, the thick cloud of unhappiness that's keeping his words down. But I'd appreciate it if you let me work the case to completion. I believe our only suppliers outside of Gotham have designs for the city beyond simple smuggling. Dick wonders how he doesn't know that facing down the barrel of a loaded gun, he looked more like Bruce than Bruce himself had at times.
Why didn't you dodge when Bruno shot?
He has to ask. Has to know. Damien looks at him with betrayal, like this is some sort of other test that he's set up for him. Because if I did, he would have shot the hostage.
I'm afraid I can't let you work on the case, Dick says, the beat of his heart a drum in his ears.
Damien curls into himself, his hurt radiating from him like a light. Dick wants to gather him up into his arms again, but he'd probably get an uppercut for his troubles.
See, it's kind of a partnership deal, he says, unable to hide his grin as hope suffuses Damien's face. You think you're up for it?
But I failed the test, he repeats, disbelieving. I didn't manage to evade you till sunrise.
Ah, about that,
Dick points a finger at the warehouse roof, at the hole he'd carved for himself. Sunlight has begun to filter in, painting everything in pale yellows. Damien hides his smile in his sleeve, like Dick hadn't seen it, like he could erase the fact that he'd smiled exactly like his father did when he was younger, all lopsided dimples and a cleft in his chin.
So, what do you say? Are you willing to become a part of the Batman and?
On one condition, Damien wrinkles his nose, considering. I get to change the color scheme. I refuse to be seen wearing green tights. Dick can't help from laughing at that. He reaches out to ruffle his dust-matted locks, but Damien dodges. That's okay. They have all the time in the world for Dick to figure out how to annoy him the most. The end. End author's notes. Some notes on canon. Initially, Dick doesn't let Damien out on the streets, preferring to keep him down in the cave working on analyzing different clues. This does give a rather cute scene of Damien holding Dick in high enough esteem to say his input is of no use, because Dick is sure to have solved things already, with the addendum of, unless he's more of an idiot than I thought, but still. Stuff like their code names and channel names, barring Damien's, are canon per the Gotham Knights comics. The hymn Damien uses for his cipher is Te Lucis Ante Terminum. Dick uses different ciphers during the gauntlet, which Bruce found kind of hilarious. Frank Lloyd Wright has canonically called Gotham a land of giants and Batman Gotham Knights.
The end for real this time.
I'm the roach in your drawer. I lived here long before you. I'm the rumble of war. It gets hard to ignore you. Well, love, sometimes folks just need something to scream at. Scream out. I'm the hills in the distance. You see me, can't be me. You need me in the half, Lord. I need you completely. Oh, sometimes folks just need something they can scream at.